This week's mailbag comes to us from Holland. I'm such a newbie to this program, and I have tried several different ones over the past year that just didn't make sense to me. I've ordered All Access because I'm just that excited about it. I took the Clutterbug quiz last night while listening to Lisa's podcast on bugs. I'm a butterfly. That explains all of the baskets that I have all over my house. I can now give myself permission to keep it on the macro level, and if items are in a container that I can't see, I label it, which has made it so much easier for my husband to know where things go. I've been saying for the last couple of months, if you don't like it, don't hold on to it. My husband actually pulled a pair of swim trunks out and he said, "I don't like these and I want to get rid of them." That is the first time he has ever said that. I'm calling that a major win and celebrating it this morning. Thank you, Organize 365 and Lisa.
Do you have an Organize 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organize365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. I do not want to waste 1 minute of your productive October. I'm telling you, if you really start following the energies of the seasons, you will notice the last 2 weeks in September through the first 2 weeks in November are the most productive 8 weeks that we have in the United States in the entire calendar. So I'm going to make these next four podcasts very short and very actionable. We are going to be talking about decluttering. Normally, I talk about organizing. But I am not going to talk about organizing. I am only going to talk about decluttering. And then I hope you go take some action. The number one thing that will make your decluttering easier, faster, and productive is to start creating rules for yourself. I've told you this before, but the first time I learned about rules was when I was a creative memories consultant and I had monthly Friday night workshops, and people would come and they would work on their photos and they would ask me questions. And they would say, "How many photographs fit in a book?" And I'd say, "Well, you know, if you put two or three on a page, it would be this many. And if you do a collage, it's this many." And they would get started on their albums, but they would hesitate and they would shuffle their pictures around and they wouldn't do very much with them. And finally, I realized what they were asking me was, "What's the rule? How many photos go in a photo album? If you tell me it's 100, then I'll put the photos that I have in stacks of 100. If you tell me it's 200, I'll put them in stacks of 200. And then when I have 200 photos, I'll make an album." So I started saying it's 200 photos. That's how many fit in an album. And immediately, people started making piles. And within a couple months, most of those people had started on albums. And I realized that not only had they started on albums, they had determined how many albums they were going to make for whatever that event was. For some people, they were making a scrapbook about their baby's first year of life. And so they found the 200 best photos and they put those in a book and that was going to be their baby album. For others, they had 600 photos from their child's first year of life and they decided they were going to make three albums because they weren't going to get rid of any of their photos. But because the rule was 200 photos fit in an album, they then were able to make that decision. Do I want to cull and get the best and make one album, or do I want to make as many albums as my photos will create? Rules. Rules actually free us, help us make faster and quicker decisions, and reduce decision fatigue. What you need for decluttering, the reason why decluttering is difficult for some people is because they don't create rules and they keep questioning the rules that they made. Now, don't get me wrong, there is an emotional element to decluttering, especially if you're decluttering memories or a passion project area. Passion projects are things that, like for me, would be puzzles, scrapbooking, anything business related. I don't want to get rid of any of it because these are the things that I love to do. You can go in my kitchen and get rid of everything in there. I won't even notice because I'm not into cooking. But if you go in my mother-in-law's kitchen and you move a spoon, she will know that you moved a spoon because cooking is her passion project. So whatever your passion project is, super hard to declutter, and we're not going to be talking about decluttering those areas in the next couple of podcasts. We are going to talk about things that are not emotional for you and things that just need to get decluttered. Recognizing that there are emotional decluttering things and non-emotional decluttering things will help you as well, because you can move on into the non-emotional and just get started. So this week, we're going to start with paper because I came out with a book, The Paper Solution, in August. And many, many, many of you have read it. And a lot of you are working through that book and decluttering and organizing your files. And so let's talk about what it takes to declutter your filing cabinet. Now, I always say that 85% of your filing cabinet can probably go. And most of you who've done it agree with me. You're like, yep, I actually got rid of 90%. Some of you are thinking, there's no way. Like, I wouldn't even need a filing cabinet. Right. I know. Isn't that so great? Like, we can just ditch it. We don't even need the filing cabinet. But what we need to do is we need to create rules. And inside of The Paper Solution, that's what I did in that book. I created rules for almost every single kind of paper that you have. And I talked about this idea of creating paper sorting rules. The reason why sorting paper is so hard for so many, and there really has not been a book before on how to make those decisions, is because for the majority of us, I venture to say almost all of us, when you pick up a piece of paper or you see a stack of paper, you see however many pieces of paper there are decisions to be made. So if there are 100 pieces of paper in that pile, there are 100 decisions to be made. But what I realized and what I now teach is there are only a few categories of paper. And once you know what those categories of paper are, you can make rules for those categories of paper. And then when you touch a paper, you know, is it an actionable paper or is it an archive paper? And if it's an archive paper, what are your rules that you've set up to know if you need to keep it? And if you do, for how long? So let's start with a couple of categories and I'll explain what I mean. For this conversation, we are not talking about any papers that are in your Sunday basket, on your kitchen counter, or are what I call actionable papers. These are things, notes to yourself, forms to fill out, mail to open, things you need to do something with. All of that should be in the Sunday basket, bazillion, million, trillion other podcasts I have about that. In this podcast, we're just talking about what's in your filing cabinet and papers that you think you need to save. And we're going to go category by category, not through all the categories, but a few categories. The biggest and easiest category of paper in your filing cabinet to start with are manuals. Manuals for your electronics, for your appliances, for your kids' toy stuff, manuals and warranties. First, what are your rules? My rule is I don't keep any. Warranties, yes, but only if the item is, you know, like we kept the warranty for our carpet. I don't never know how to use these warranties. We kept the warranty for our windows and we did have them replace one of those, but I have like 5 warranties I've kept. If it's a warranty for your toaster, I'm not going to find the warranty. I don't even know how to turn it in. I'm just going to go buy another toaster. So I don't keep those warranties. And I don't keep any manuals, except I do for cameras because I actually read those. And cars, I read car manuals. So car manuals and camera manuals, I keep. Every other manual, as soon as we plug in the appliance, I throw away the manual. I know some of you are having a heart failure right now. It's okay. You can have whatever rule you want to have. I know I've shared with you on the podcast before my story about trying to fix my own washing machine. It's hilarious. I don't know what episode it's in. Basically, bottom line, I didn't do it because I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. Furthermore, I don't know how to fix anything else that has a manual that comes with it. And something that I observed over time was that every time I have an electrician, a plumber, an appliance repair person come into the house that does know how to fix these things, to fix these things, you know what no one ever in the last 25 years has ever asked me for? The manual. No, never. Never, and I have had a lot of people in this house. Have they ever said, oh, this is great. Can you go get the manual so I can fix this for you? No. I don't know. They have manual knowledge magic. They just know how to do it without the manual. So why would I ever need the manual? I'm not going to fix it. And the person who does come to fix it never needs it. So what I did with all of my manuals was I tore off the top cover, which tells you the model number. I threw all the manuals away and I kept that top cover for when I was going to make my binder. That is my rule about manuals. My rule about warranties is if we've spent thousands of dollars on something and it comes with a warranty, I will keep the warranty because I feel guilty getting rid of it, even though I know I'm not going to be very good at using the warranty if I ever need to, so I just hope I never need to use it, but I do keep them. What about other kinds of paper? We just received at the office and at our house a new phone book, and my husband said, "They're still sending these out? Why are they still sending these out?" I said, "I don't know." We take phone books when they come on our driveway and we immediately take the plastic wrap off and throw that away and then put the phone book in the recycling because we're never going to use it. I got to the warehouse later that week and I opened up the cabinet to put away some light bulbs and I noticed that the phone book had ended up in the cabinet. I immediately pulled it out, walked to the recycling in the warehouse and recycled it. We're never using a phone book at the warehouse either because that's my rule. It's been my rule for 10 years because 10 years ago, we stopped using phone books. Whenever I see a phone book anywhere in my purview, in my domain, I immediately walk it to the recycle bin. So that's another rule that I have. What about kids' school papers? Drawings, all kids' school papers. Here's my particular rule on those papers. If it is a paper that does not have my child's name in it, like it's a newsletter, but my child is not mentioned in it, gone. If it's like a math worksheet, gone. If it's, you know, anything that is mass produced, gone. What I end up keeping are whenever my child has written their name for the first time, anything that is made with their adorable little handprints, any unique stories that they've written, art that they've created, those are the things that I keep. Now, one way to make this decluttering keep going faster and not getting stuck in memory lane is that when you get to kids' artwork and you have that rule, if it's like all the weekly readers, we just file all those in the round bin and we recycle them. And then all the kids' artwork, just put it inside of a bin. Don't decide which adorable handprint turkey you're going to keep right now. Just decide that these are things that we keep. I will do the micro sorting later when I organize. But right now, I'm just going to get rid of all the newsletters, all the worksheets, all the spelling tests, all the things that I know we're not keeping, and reduce the amount of kids' schoolwork that I need to go through when I know that these are actionable things that I want to keep. What about your files that have things related to pets? Do you or don't you want to keep these things? And do you or don't you want to keep them for pets that you don't have anymore? I used to keep everything related to pets. And then I realized that my veterinarian is amazingly good at record keeping for my dog. I mean, amazingly good. They call me when they know I'm running out of my prescription. They ask me every time I take the dog in when he had his flea and tick medicine. Like, they have checklists upon checklist upon checklist. They are never asking me when he needs his next vaccine or his teeth cleaned or any of that. They're always telling me when I need to do preventative maintenance, when I need to do, you know, refill prescriptions. They're great at that. And I use the same vet. We have one vet, one dog. It's very easy. I don't have any of the pet information, the veterinarian records for our cats who have passed away. And I only have in Hunter's part of my binder, his rabies tag, because I think you're supposed to keep that. Other than that, I don't have anything related to my pets. You may want to keep more. That's what I have kept. What about anything else related to the house? Paint chips, wallpaper samples, the colors of carpets, all of those kind of things. I do keep all of those, and I would put those in a bin ready to go into my binders. Remember, we're not making binders now. We're not creating new filing cabinet labels. We're really just sorting what we want to keep and what we want to get rid of. Okay, one more category I'll go through that I have is automobiles. Same thing I recognize with my pet registration. I used to keep every single oil change, everything that I did, every single car, and then when we would turn the car in, we would get an extra $500 because we had all of the maintenance records, and then we would get our next car. And what I realized in the last 5 years is that car dealerships don't work that way anymore. They don't give you that $500 back anymore if you have all of the maintenance. And again, just like with the pets, I take my car to the dealership to have everything done. Now, you might not, but I go to the dealership to have everything done. And so they have all of the records of everything that I've done to my car. And they also tell me when I need an oil change, when I need new tires, when I need all of these other things. And so I rely on that information to then do my own due diligence and decide if I want to have that done to my car or not. But I don't have to worry about when it comes up that I need to do it next, because my car dealership will actually let me know. And even for Joey and Abby's cars, we get emails. Like, we get emails around the time when they would need oil changes. It's just something that car dealerships have started doing. And so I don't keep that information. I just keep the purchasing information and the insurance information. The easiest way for you to declutter your entire filing cabinet in only 15 minutes a day is to bring like 3 to 5 files out of your filing cabinet, wherever it lives, and take them into the kitchen counter or take them wherever you watch TV at night. And then just go through those 3 to 5 files. And as you open up each file, think about the rule that you've made. If it's a new category that you've not made a rule about yet, like let's say insurance paperwork, then think, okay, insurance paperwork. What do I need to keep? What do I want to keep from this? For me, I keep our initial policy and the most recent receipt of payment for that policy. So the most recent receipt for each of the cars that we have, but I don't keep all of the other ones that have been sent to me. So you can already see how much can be decluttered out of that file. You make that rule, you go through the file, you have your shredding or your recycling pile, and then you have the things you want to keep, and then put the files back in the filing cabinet. You don't need to make binders today. That's organizing. We're just decluttering. And you'll be surprised how fast you can get through a filing cabinet just doing 3 to 5 files a day, 15 minutes a day, usually a month or two. You can get through your entire filing cabinet and you will have reduced the amount that you have in there by 50 to 80%. And then you're ready for the paper solution to walk you through how to make your binders.